It's time to accelerate. Hi, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Join me as I host conversations with the leading experts in sales, marketing, sales automation, sales process, leadership, management, training, coaching, any resource that I believe to help you accelerate the growth of your sales, your business, and most importantly, you. Hello, and welcome to Accelerate. I'm very excited to talk with my guest today. Joining me is Drew Neiser, co-founder and CEO of Renegade, a digital marketing agency based here in New York City, and author of a really excellent book called The CMO's Periodic Table, A Renegade's Guide to Digital Marketing. In sales, the emphasis over the past few years has migrated to sales as a service. Salespeople provide a service in the way that they deliver value to the prospect to help them make a purchase decision. But now we're starting to hear about marketing as a service and changing the focus of marketing from being message pushers to value providers. So what that means for marketing and what it means for sales within a company whose marketing is value provider is one of the topics I'm going to tackle with my guest today, Drew Neiser. Drew, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andy. It's great to be here.
Well, thanks for coming. So take a minute and fill out that introduction I started with.
Well, I run an agency called Renegade, which I've owned outright since 2008 when I bought out my partners Dentsu. And we service
Japanese company, yes.
There, yes, exactly. And we service chief marketing officers. And as a way to ingratiate myself with CMOs, I started writing about them. And I wrote about them and wrote about them. And it was a helpful way for those CMOs to get some exposure. And it started a conversation. And eventually it got to, hey, Drew, what's Renegade do? And we got business out of it. But the surprise and the unexpected benefit of all those interviews was it was like, I'm Spock and this is a Vulcan mind meld. And I literally just felt like I sucked out the brains and the wisdom from all these different marketers. And in the last 5 years, I probably interviewed over 150 of those, and 64 of them actually made it into my book. And so here we are. That's, the world, according to Drew, condensed into, a soundbite.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, no, it's funny you say that about the interviews, because I feel the same way about this podcast. Is, selfishly, I'm learning more than my, the amount of wisdom I'm imparting through it, just from all the guests that I've had on. We've already published 100 episodes by the time we're recording this, and by the time this goes out, this will probably be around 150, 160. And so, I'm learning a lot.
No, it's amazing. And one of the things, the exercises that I found that sort of solidified the learning was once I doing the interview is one thing, but then writing about the interview and trying to break it down into a story even further really makes it, sort of turns it from words on a page to ideas and a case in your head. And what I found is that suddenly, let's say that someone has a content marketing issue and they're in the B2C space. Well, I said, let's talk about how Richard Marnell at Viking River Cruises handles content for some inspiration, right? Mm-hmm. Well, boom, suddenly that's a credibility and information that I can share with a client. And it's sort of perspective that would have been impossible to have based on our client portfolio. It's like,
absolutely.
Like a lawyer having read every precedent that there is before they go into the courtroom, right?
Yeah. Or remembering every precedent.
Yes, exactly. And so anyway, in the periodic table was a way in some ways to give back, because, look, our clients, the best clients are ones that do their job well, right? And, there's no school for CMOs. There's no educational program. They just sort of grow up and suddenly, hey, you're a chief marketing officer. And so, what we've discovered is that, no CMO is perfect. The ones that really are successful are the ones that sort of have figured out, okay, I'm really good at this. I need people around me that are really good at this. I need to do a few things well, right? Set the agenda and follow through on certain things. And so this book and the process of organizing it helped me also understand, okay, what are the basics that every CMO needs to do, right? And those are in the basic elements. And then if we go all the way over on the other side of the periodic table, what are these outstanding sort of, I call them inert fundamentals that are my biases to what I think makes a great marketer, and noble pursuits, and things that I think are really impressive because they not only help the businesses grow, but they don't create what I call ad pollution.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so let's take a step back and talk about marketing as a service. As I said in the open, I mean this is something that's sort of come and gone a little bit in sales, but it's coming back more and more. I mean, hopefully more and more too, as we're trying to see is how successful we get with it. That, the way that you win a customer, there's the whole, people buy from people they know, like, and trust, but you're really providing a service, helping people make a decision. And if marketing is doing the same thing, it seems like it opens up some really interesting panoramas for collaboration between sales and marketing. So let's talk about what you think about when you say marketing as a service.
Well, it's taking, so the difference in my mind, and this is a funny one, I just wrote this today, is this question of, is selling about the seller and marketing about the market, right? So for a moment.
In some cases it is, right?
Right.
Unfortunately.
And then if marketing is about the market and marketing is romance and selling is consummation, then I'm in the romance business. And the service these days is really a great way to think about romance and getting a customer involved. Whether it's B2B or B2C, they're going to your website, right? They're going to check it out, or they're going to find content out there that exists that will help inform and educate them when they finally come to make a purchase decision. If you played a role somewhere along the way that helped them, whatever it was, get something in it. By the way, it doesn't have to be your product or service. That's the wonderful thing about marketing a service. I mean, I'm sure you do this. I'll meet a client. I'll find out they're really into fly fishing. I'll see a video on fly fishing or a book. Mm-hmm. I'll send them the book on fly fishing.
Right.
It has nothing to do with it, but what it does is that's his passion. And so we've connected on that passion. And I said, look, I care enough about you as an individual that I'm going to share this with you. And look, and if we end up doing business, great. If we don't, that's okay too. But, so it's a very customer-centric way to do it.
Now, sure, but the example you just gave is sales, though.
Yes.
So how's that translate then into marketing?
All right. So let's go to
just so people understand where I'm coming from is that, marketing we perceive as, billboards and ads and magazines that serve this mass,
right? So
one to many, as opposed to really what you're talking about. When to me, I hear about a service, I think about it as a one to one.
Okay. So let's take a billboard that says buy my product today versus the temperature is 50 degrees. Get your raincoat. One's a message, right? Mm-hmm. Buy my product. The other is a service that I got your attention. I gave you something of value. And oh, by the way, now that I've given you something of value, feel free to, turn on the Weather Channel or to do something based on that information, that service that I gave you. That's a very simplistic example. But let me give you the one I talk about in the book, which is John Hayes and American Express, and they've been doing this for 30 years. They figured out very fundamentally that if small businesses grow, their business grows, and that's exactly the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
So they think of ways to help small businesses grow. So one of the most, I think profound ways they've done that is in something called Small Business Saturday. It's now in its fourth year. It is a fundamental service. They created a day that the world focuses on small businesses. Then they add elements to it, like, hey, spend $30 on your first $30 that you spend on small business is on our card. There's another sort of service that they provided to follow, put their money where their mouth is. They tell the small businesses exactly how to support Small Business Saturday. So they've educated them on how to promote this major event. And they've allowed all sorts of other companies to come in and celebrate Small Business Saturday. So they don't even own it necessarily. They've created a movement that is fundamentally a service for small businesses to compete with Cyber Monday and, Black Friday. So that to me is a quintessential big scale marketing a service that started with a very fundamental notion of how can I help my customers grow? That to me is such an enlightened perspective. And if you start every conversation and every interaction with this question of how do I help my customers grow, I mean, one of the reasons that I write about chief marketing officers is so that I can help them do their job better, right?
Well, yeah. And also that question is such a fundamental question on the sales side as well, because if you're a sales rep and you're thinking to yourself, while you're with the customer. What can I do that can help this customer grow, as opposed to what can I do to sell this product?
Exactly. And so again,
it's just a fundamental difference. And it sort of calls to mind, you know, in the book, you have the interview with Jeffrey Hazlett, who updates the four pillars of marketing, you know, from product, place, price, and promotion, with the fifth one, which is people. And it seems to me this really is sort of the exemplification of that. It's like, it's about, at the end of the day, you can have all the process you want, but it ultimately boils down to a person buying from a person.
I think, you know, I certainly think that's true. We like to buy from people we know and trust, in the same way with brands, and how do brands build trust. And there's a lot of ways of for service opportunities out there. I mean, this, and what's interesting is they become standard in the industry. What, somebody was the first mortgage company to have a configurator that said, come here and we'll help you figure out how big a loan you can get, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you should have a 15-year, that's a service that they're providing. Well, you know, 10 years ago, they didn't have that service. And so the what's happening is that the standards of expected service. And so one of the things I talk a lot about, not necessarily in the book, but before you can get to marketing as service, you actually have to have service as service. In other words, you have to have a standard of service that is acceptable in the industry, right? Let's say you're marketing to Hispanics and you better have somebody on the phone that can speak Spanish, right? That's a level right. of service that's expected. So you have to have service as service. And once you've sort of met the industry standard for whatever service is, whether it's online chat or, you know, then you can move up to this next level and you can say, all right, how do I forget messaging, buy my product, here's a great mortgage, to how can I help you get in your home, right? How can I help you pick out your next home? How can I do these things that will enable you to get, you know, as they say, nobody wants a mortgage, they want a home, right? You know, it's the old, I don't want a drill, I want a hole. Cool, right. Right. And so there's this interesting, and so the service, again, to me, is an enlightened perspective, because the worst that happens is you performed a service.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's right. The bottom line is the worst is you.
The worst, whereas you can do ads that alienate people, you can do ads that don't get a reaction to people. But when you focus on a service, we had a program, and I write about it in the book, called the HSBC Bank Cab. It was HSBC came to us and said, we want New Yorkers to believe that HSBC is a local bank and to fulfill this promise of the world's local bank. So help New Yorkers feel that, even though our initials stand for something else. Help us do it. And they said, well, maybe you could give out, you know, shamrocks or on St. Patrick's Day or Statue of Liberties, right, on July 4th. And we said, well, maybe we could do more. Maybe there's a service out there. So we created a checker cab called the Bank Cab. We did a search for the most knowledgeable cab driver in New York. We put that cab, this luxurious checker cab, on the road. And for, I think, 11 years, it provided free rides to HSBC customers. And so there it was. It was a marketing that was a service. Mm-hmm. It also, you know, it was a billboard because you drove around New York. But fundamentally, those folks that got in the cab were five times more likely to recommend HSBC than those that hadn't. They, you know, they called at minimum four people after riding and said, you won't believe it, it's like winning the lottery. I got a free ride in a cab today. I mean, you know,
they have to like put their ATM card in the door for it to unlock or something?
No. They just sort of, they flagged them down and they'd show their card. And if they were not a customer, Johnny would pick them up and say, hey, I'll take you to the nearest HSBC branch, so at least they could, you know, get
whether
somewhere.
Whether you want to or not.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, we were pretty generous about that. But it was one of those things that just is such a great example of a service that is marketing, that I like to point it out just because it frames it for people who are trying to figure out, what are you talking about?
Well, and also, so much of that, or what you're talking about, really has become enabled by technology. So it's almost like there's no excuse not to do something like that these days, given how inexpensive technology is and the ability to do something like that. You know, as you said, maybe even just a weather board with a thermometer on it, right? Temperature reading on it. That could be it. And the same is true on the sales side. It's we're moving into this era where increasingly it seems like so much of sales is dominated by, you know, mass calling, you know, mass email, undifferentiated flood of undifferentiated messages. It doesn't really take much to do something that really sets yourself apart.
Well, it doesn't, but it takes a commitment to wanting to be unique and committing to a strategy. I mean, I think one of the important things in all of this is you know, marketing is not about one-offs, and they're about campaigns. And so we talk a lot here about content marketing campaigns mm-hmm. versus, you know, sort of a post on this and a post right. on that. So it really does, a brand needs to commit and an individual needs to commit to a uniqueness and not, you know, better or faster or cheaper, but what is it that is essentially differentiating on a grand scale? I mean, you know, I mean, there's nothing like IKEA, right? There's just nothing like it there. Mm-hmm. And every aspect of their supply chain and the way they sell is such that supports their uniqueness. And so individuals can be you know, unique in terms of the, how they present themselves. I mean, the extreme case is writer Tom Wolfe, who always wore white, right? That's an extreme visual example of uniqueness, and you would never miss the guy no matter where he was. But I think that whether we're talking about personal strategies or business strategies, you know, figuring out what it is that makes you unique, then the service follows so easily. And I can give you another example of that of a small business that I love. It's not in the book, but it's just a great story.
Sure, go ahead.
So I'm on the board of the co-op in New York, and we had to redo our hallways. And so we had three vendors come in, and we asked them questions about, you know, how do you do what you do? And the first guy says, well, we do lots of things. We do buildings, and we do restaurants and so forth. And then we said, well, what's your process like? And they said, well, we start from the top and work our way down. I said, well, is there anything else you'd like to tell us? No, here's our bid. So I said, okay, great. And then we, you know, the second guy pretty much said the same thing. And then the third one came in and said, well, you know, what do you do? And we said, and we asked, what do you do? And he said, we only do hallways for co-ops and condos. And by the way, you always start at the top and work your way down because gravity is your friend. And by the way, here are the first 10 memos that you're going to want to send to your shareholders about the process because, you know, there are lots of complaints mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. we want to minimize. And finally, we take 10% of the budget and we put it into cleanup at the end of every day because the single biggest complaint is dust. Right. Do you have any questions? So, yeah. You know, that was the easiest decision.
Where's the contract, right?
Yeah, right. Where's the contract? But when I asked him afterwards, I said, gosh, I can't believe you only do that. And he said, yeah, well, and how long was that? And he said, we started doing it about like 5 years ago. I said, was it hard at first? He said, oh my God, it was terrible because we had to turn down all this business. But he said, now we win 7 out of 10. Of our pitches. We don't have to do outbound. It's all inbound because everybody knows we're the only guys that only do hallways. And we have construction crews, so there's incredible efficiency. So we generally win on price as well, but we make more money.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, there's a really interesting lesson there that we're going to come back and talk about after the break that applies to sales. And because we'll talk about it. It has to do with sales marketing alignment. So with my guest, Drew Neiser, we'll be back right after this break.
Hi, this is Andy. Connect and Sell is used by sales reps at nearly 1,000 companies, including hundreds of technology startups and several Fortune 500 companies, to overcome the challenges of getting prospects on the phone. Companies using Connect and Sell grow their revenues faster by enabling their sales reps to have more sales conversations in 90 minutes than they could otherwise achieve in an entire week. Connect and Sell can be deployed directly to your sales reps, or you can take advantage of their outbound on-demand service, which delivers qualified prospect meetings scheduled directly on your sales reps' calendars. Visit connectandsell.com to learn more about how Connect and Sell can start filling your pipeline today.
So welcome back with my guest, Drew Neiser. We're just talking about his great story about a construction company in New York City that learned how to really identify and nail the niche that they could sell to. That was really their ideal customer profile that really helped them become incredibly competitive. And you know, one thing that we're finding in sales these days, and at least in business-to-business space, and oftentimes in technology fields, but not exclusively, is, and it's to that point, but it's that, you know, products are so rapidly commoditized that in customers' mind's eye is, you know, all the products basically look alike.
Right.
And so you've got some attempts at differentiating happening at the marketing level and so on. But by the time people get through going through all the content marketing, all of their websites and so on, they're like, you know, it's almost like toss a coin. And so increasingly it really becomes the sales rep that's that front line of differentiation. You know, just like this guy you spoke to at the co-op, in New York. I mean, they could have done that a different way, but they were, you know, they obviously had that presentation nailed perfectly. So how does sales, when they're not being given that assistance by marketing, how do they, you know, how do they differentiate that? I mean, how could they sort of become mini marketers themselves to do that? I mean, I've got some ideas that, you know, I talk about in my books about, it's really about how they sell the product along the lines of your example in New York.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, the better the salesman, the more likely they would want to work for an organization that is fundamentally interested in being unique, right? That's one, because if the product that they're selling is in fact unique, then the commitment is there, then the salesperson's efforts will align.
But they all think they're unique, though. That's the thing. I mean, I'll take tech as an example. You know, I interview a lot of CEOs and founders of tech companies for this show. And sales technologies, you know, companies selling into the sales space for sales tools. And yeah, they all think they're unique.
Right. Well, and then
they're not. But
yeah. Well, that's a different issue. So then I would imagine that the sales guy figures out, where the most fertile territory is, what the highest propensity to close is, and tries to, you know, focus their energy on that customer profile that is most likely to close, right? I mean, I would think that's where they would focus. I mean, you know, the definition of a strategy is knowing who you're not going to sell to.
Yeah, well, right? Absolutely.
And so the better that the sales guy is, the more likely they'll have an inherent understanding of who it is that appeals to this, and they do the segmentation themselves, and then the uniqueness is through that, right?
Well, in part it's through them though too. This is the part that I think is really interesting, is that this whole idea of the personal branding that's becoming more and more important.
Yeah,
is I'm a firm believer in the idea that, as I've said before, is the first line of differentiation in any business to business sales situation is the salesperson.
I think you're right.
And so you talked in a book, a couple of the interviews with people you had about, you know, one of the really critical things for success over long term is consistency and sort of your core values.
Yeah. What do you, as an individual?
As an individual. So how do you figure out what you stand for?
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually have a personal brand workshop and a strategy document that I've run a couple sessions with CMOs through the CMO Club. And, you know, you do it very much like you do it with a brand. You know, what are your objectives? You know, what is it that you think makes you unique? And I talk about, for example, if you think you're a creative CMO, and that's the thing that makes you unique, is that you're, you know, a propeller of creative big ideas, then you better be committed to doing so and have a portfolio of examples and a willingness to take a chance and to take risks, right? But don't say you're a creative, you know, that your brand is creative, and then you're basically a numbers person who can show, you know, revenue growth, right? And so I think it is, some of it is projecting. You don't have to, you can have aspirational characteristics to your personal brand, but you really have to get, ultimately, you have to be able to back that up, right? You have to be able to say that, if I am this type of salesperson, like my word is gold, right? Or mm-hmm. all the customers that have done business with me have succeeded as a result of this, right? That, you know, that you have this 99% retention rate and my customers love me, then I want to see 100 customers that this individual could call, right? Because you're the guy that every customer loves and can count on. So I think it, and those are broad. I think the differentiation has to come in the insight, it could be a category, it could be it could be just the way you talk. I mean, there's
absolutely,
right? You could just be that Southern storyteller, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that is so important, and you know, salespeople need to increasingly, and sales managers, think of themselves as mini marketers in the sense of starting with that personal brand, because like I said, that is that front line. And you know, the book's been published recently, the book published by a professor out of Harvard, Amy Cuddy, talking yes. about, you know, first impressions and how powerful they are. And I actually had done research, not even knowing about her book, into first impressions that I wrote about in my second book, because I think it's so critical. is that people are making judgments about you and your worth and your value based on the first 250 milliseconds of dealing with you.
No, it's funny. I love that book, and Amy's TED Talk is well worth watching as well. And what's so interesting about what she talks about, it's not just that first impression, but it's the self, how the body affects the mind. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she talks about spending 2 minutes in power poses before you go into that meeting, so that you've psyched your body. You know, your body has told your mind, you are powerful, you are Superman, you are Wonder Woman, right? And so you go in and your posture is better and you're standing up straight and you feel good. Now, importantly, and she talks a lot about this, that is no substitute for knowing your product and knowing your target and doing your homework. But what she talks about is how many people don't succeed even though they have all the skills they need to succeed, because they defeat themselves, because their body language is bad, because they don't trust their instincts.
Absolutely.
And so this, you know, fake it till you got it is this train your body to be a master of the universe, and then eventually you will become a master of the universe.
Well, that, I mean, I agree with that 100%. I mean, I love the book, and it's because I believe, and I, this is why I talk about in workshops with companies is, you know, I ask them, I say, well, so what was your margin of victory on your last deal? I mean, how much did you win by?
Right.
Yeah. Did you win by 5%? 10%? I'm not talking about price. How much did you win by in the customer's mind? And the fact is you only have to be 1% better to win.
Yeah.
And that 1% could be you're the Southern storyteller.
That's it.
It's built trust. It's the way you carried yourself in the meeting. It could be the tone of your voice and how you use it. I mean, there's studies talking about how people react to people's voices.
No kidding.
As being a determining factor. So yeah, you have to focus on all these things, and they're all part of your personal brand.
Yeah, I mean, just walk around. Maybe you can remember when you took your kids when they were looking at schools and how they reacted to the school based on the male or female that was touring the campus with you, right? That yes. Impression, that individual represented all 5,000 students. It's just hilarious, but it's true. You're right. I think that these things do. You don't have to win by much. You just have to win. And if you look, what's so funny is you talk to consumers and brands and you say, okay, why'd you buy the product? And at first they will give you the rational reason, right? It had better gas mileage and it was a little bit cheaper. But ultimately there's an irrational aspect to it, which is I just liked it better. But you can't, you know, consumers are like trained when you ask them the questions in a certain way, they'll answer like they did, you know, in school, and they'll try to give you the right answer as opposed to, and the rational, because, but we just don't behave that way. We make decisions based on trust, and trust is an irrational notion.
Sure. Well, I mean, think about it in sales. I mean, one of the things you're trying to do is, and you're trying to do if you're a sales rep, is you're trying to think, okay, what's going to make my customer successful? Not just the company, but the person I'm dealing with, the one that's making the decision, the one that's the key influencer. Because if this doesn't work out for them, it's a problem.
Right.
And no, so now you think, okay, people are then are what's influencing their decision making? Well, part of it is this going to help me get promoted, going to help me retain my job, help me get a raise? I mean, it's going to do something, right? Those are all emotions. Those aren't logic.
Well, and it's true. I mean, that's the old IBM. No one ever got fired for hiring IBM.
Yeah, the whole fun factor, right.
Now, and I think that's a really interesting and fruitful area to sort of explore as you think about your personal brand. Yes, is how are you going to develop that that trust? And, you know, one of the things that I talk a lot about when I'm with CMOs is you've got 2 years. That's the average. Maybe you've got 3. And here's the thing. You will not succeed if you get a 2%, you know, growth rate, and you did it through direct mail and manipulating. You might keep your job. You might. But if you take 10% of your dollars and create an innovation fund and you do something outstanding over there, you might actually get promoted into the boardroom. Right? And so you, it's in some ways there's this need to, you know, innovate or die. And so, you know, my message to them and why would they want to work with Renegade or Drew is that if you're not thinking about that innovation factor, not only do you not have a chance at getting to the CEO suite, the CEO, but you're not going to have a great story to tell when you get your next job.
Yeah. So, the same thing is true with the sales rep, right?
Right.
They're not thinking outside the box of how to be able to deliver value to their prospects that stands apart from the competitors.
Right.
Then, yeah, they're not going to win that deal or many deals at all.
Yeah, I think that's true. Or they, you know, I think there's this other thing, and I talk a lot about this, and this is, again, I think the difference between sales and marketing and where marketing and sales are often in an alignment. I've worked with a couple of companies that were very focused on cost per acquisition and getting the sale. And it didn't matter who was in the pipeline, right? They just got the sale. And at the time, we were doing the social media for two of these companies, and they were just getting the customer, getting them in as cheaply as they could on deal. And we were forced to clean up the mess on social media. Mm-hmm. And the fundamental problem was they were acquiring the wrong customers.
Yes.
Right? And so if your sales guys are only incentivized to buy the upfront revenue, right, as opposed to getting the customer that will have the longest lifetime value and will be the ones that will have, the strongest word of mouth, you have misalignment between marketing and sales.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that's a fundamental problem in organizations, and where it really becomes to, where the rubber meets the road today is the leakage in the sales first strategies comes out in social media. It comes out in word of mouth. And, you've got this, yes, we're growing on, 10% sales growth in terms of new customer acquisition, and we have a 15%. Churn rate.
Right. Yeah. And we're being slaughtered on social media.
And, nobody's getting, the marketing guys are getting screwed, paying for the churn, and the sales guys are still driving the customers in the door. And so that's where these two things, why I think organizations are increasingly saying, we need a chief customer experience officer, or the marketing person, CMO, needs to be thinking about that. Because if we have misalignment there, and you are what you measure, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're not aligned on we want to acquire the right customers that will, and that's so the sales guys are incented for the right customers, and we want to provide this type of experience. Well, if you acquire the wrong customers, you can't get that experience right.
Exactly.
And so it's a complicated thing, but there's so many things have been written on the alignment of marketing and sales. And, I think it goes back to the CEO and that first chapter you talked about, Jeffrey Hazlett, and in managing expectations. Mm-hmm. What's everybody's job? How are they going to be rewarded? And what is it that you expect from the salesperson or the marketer or the CMO or the head of sales? And if those things are not clear, if it's only top line revenue, you're going to have pretty lousy marketing.
Yeah. No, you right? as he said, you got to have a shared vision of what that is that you're trying to achieve.
And you better, and it needs to be defined. And I think one of the things that CMOs don't do necessarily a great job of is defining how do we measure marketing in a way that can sort of translate over here to revenue,
right?
Which is the language of the CEO and the CFO.
Excellent, excellent. Well, good. Well, we're gonna thank for all that information. We're gonna move to the last segment of the show. I've got some standard questions I ask all my guests, and the first one is a hypothetical scenario. You've just been hired as a new sales leader at a company whose sales have stalled out. They really want to get unstuck really quickly. Senior manager's got their eyes on you, and you're not going to have 2 years to do this. So what two things would you do your first week on the job that could have the biggest impact?
I would talk to the happiest customer and the least happy customer.
Mm-hmm.
Is number one. And number two is I would find out, I would manufacture some news. In this sense, I need to find, because if things have stalled, it generally means that you don't have a new message, you don't have a new product, you don't have something that is compelling. So I'm going to find a way
mm-hmm.
to have news. And it, whether it's, you know, just saying, hey, this is 3.1,
right?
But I'm going to find a way to create some news so that I can restart the conversation with prospects and customers.
Like it. Great answer. Very concise. Good stuff. All right. So I got some rapid fire questions for you here. You can give me one word answers or you can elaborate. So when you're selling, trying to get a new client, what's the most powerful sales tool in your personal arsenal?
Every sales presentation that I start with. Oh, I'm supposed to give you one word?
Oh. No. This can be.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could be questions if you want to say questions, but go ahead.
Yeah. So typically, looking at the prospect, sitting across from them and asking them, what do you, you know, you've been thinking about this a long time. What do you want to solve here? And rarely, if I would say 9 out of 10 times, they grab the hook and they run with it and they tell you exactly what it is that they want, what they need, and what the last three presenters did not provide.
Exactly. Great point.
And then you customize your presentation. I think the worst thing you could do is walk into a meeting and said, here's what we're going to present.
Right.
Here it is, because they don't care. They don't really care. It's amazing. They don't care who you've worked for. They don't care that it's like, are you willing to understand my problem and my challenge? And can you help me solve it?
Yeah. So here's, see what you say about this. I mean, here's the best advice I give to people about sales presentations. So going in, you know, formal sales presentation. I figure we'll be in a conference room. Sit down, everybody. Don't stand up. Don't have anybody standing up. Don't have the slide projector on. You know, none of that. In fact, have your slides ready. But your best meeting is you'd never turn that machine on.
Totally agree.
And start with that question. And then, like I said, let them tell you where you're going to go. And have your, so like pro football coaches, you know, you watch them on TV and they're carrying these plastic sheets and the commentators duly say every week, well, they've scripted the first 25 plays. Well, script your first 10 questions.
Yeah. And who's going to ask them, right? And why are you asking those questions? And don't make them uncomfortable. Only one time in all the years that I've been doing that where I asked the CEO, you know, where, you know, what's keeping you awake at night, did not only not answer, but it made him uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't swift enough to respond to sort of move on. But it was, I knew the meeting was over. I could have just stopped. And I should have, because there would have been a moment to reverse that. In retrospect, I could have reclaimed that one.
Right.
But I just then went on, but I knew it was over. So, you know, if you ask a question that puts a customer on the spot, and they don't like that, then you better be prepared to find another way to get them engaged and intrigued.
That's why you don't just have two questions. That's why you have 10.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Who's your sales role model?
I'm going to take a lifeline on that. No. let's see. My sales role model, Daniel Lebetsky. He's the founder of Kind. And he tells wonderful stories about before even Kind started, how he wanted to, you know, he was trying to get Zabar's to carry his his Mediterranean creams, you know, these sauces that he had. And he just went there himself, and he kept going and he kept going and he kept going, and he would not leave until he got Zabar's. He had 5 places in New York City that he wanted to carry, and he just stayed relentlessly committed to getting those because those were the right accounts for him.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Refuse to lose. That's a great one. Okay. So what's one book every salesperson should read?
Let's see. Oh, probably mine, of course.
Sure. But besides yours.
Yes.
And mine.
But besides mine. So I just finished listening to presenting like Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And what I liked about that book was that it simplified things for me in a way that I think really makes sense. The notion of having a headline, one that literally for your entire presentation, whatever it is, but think of it as, you know, like Steve Jobs talking about an iPod and saying it's like 10,000 songs in your pocket. If you can write a headline like that for your sales presentation, and then you have 3 key supporting platforms for that, you are probably going to put together a really strong presentation that, because people can only remember three things anyway.
Oh, exactly.
Right.
And even so, that, not for very long.
No. And so, but the headlines, they remember forever.
And so that was the one by Carmine Gallo?
I think that's right. Yes. Carmine Gallo. Yeah. And so I just, you know, that's, it's perfect. Not, it's just top of mind, and I've used it now several times. I went, okay, because I'm not as much admirer of Steve Jobs as a business leader, because he's such a unique individual. Mm-hmm. But I think his presentation methodology could be adopted by anyone who was interested.
Okay. Now, here's the tough question.
Okay.
What's on your playlist right now?
So, I am listening to another, funny enough, I'm listening to another podcast on selling and closing, which is really interesting because it's not my thing. And then next up for me is a different look at the history of the United States. I'm a big history buff and Ben Franklin fan, and so I'm constantly listening to and reading books about the Revolutionary War and all the characters and the founding fathers. So
I've got some. Well, trade recommendations. That's one of my period as well.
Love
but
it.
I really meant what music is on your playlist.
Oh, on my music playlist. So we recently got an Amazon Echo.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll simply say to Alexa, you know, hit me with, 60s or 70s or 80s or 90s. And so it's just this vast playlist. But I will give you one funny story that's great. My wife and I are on a tour that we call the See Them Before They Die tour.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we've been going to 5 to 7 concerts each year to see bands from the 60s, 70s, and 80s before they die.
Which was last one you just saw?
So let's see. We saw Yes, we saw the Rolling Stones, we saw Toto,
Toto, oh my gosh.
No, I mean, it's hilarious. So and then we went to the Joan Baez 75th birthday celebration. And, you know, I've been in, by the way, that was not, the music quality was terrible, but the event was wonderful.
Yeah. Well, excellent. Okay, well, Drew, I want to thank you for joining me. My guest, Drew Neiser. Drew, how can people find out more about you and Renegade?
So you can find Renegade at renegade.com. You can find lots of my interviews on the Drew blog, and you can learn more about my book on cmobook.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you very much. And remember, friends, make it a part of your day and every day to deliberately learn something new to help you accelerate your success. Now, listening to this podcast is a great way to do that, because then you'll make sure you won't miss any of my conversations with top business experts like my guest today, Drew Neiser, who shared his expertise about how to accelerate the growth of your business. So thanks for joining us. Until next time, this is Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you like what you heard and want to make sure you don't miss any upcoming episodes, please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher.com. For more information about today's guest, visit my website at andypaul.com.